Our next speaker is Dan Yergin. He is Vice Chairman of IHS Market and author of The Prize, as well as The Quest. He has a new book coming out called The New Map, Energy, Climate, and the Clash of Nations. Go ahead, Dan.
Thank you, Larry, and I'm finishing The Galleys today, but it's already up on Amazon. This morning I was speaking to the CEO of one of the international oil companies, and he said they had a lot of worst-case scenarios, but nothing like this one. This, what's happened in the oil market, was not in anybody's scenario. In 1998 and 1986, when oil prices collapsed, demand went up. Not this time. And so what's unfolded in the oil industry is really two phases. Phase one was the shutdown of China, where about 6 million barrels a day out of 100 million barrels a day of market disappeared. That, we thought at the time, was a lot. It was the end of that phase when the OPEC, non-OPEC meeting in Vienna broke up at the beginning of March. Some of the people there thought, well, okay, this will wipe out or set back U.S. shale and leave them fine. But that's just when the second phase began, and that's where we are now. Just to give you some framework, this month we think world oil demand's down about 30 million barrels a day. That's almost a third of demand, 22 million barrels this quarter. Gasoline is down more than 50% in the U.S., 65% in Europe. Jet fuel is down 70%. And future bookings on airlines in the United States are down 97%. So that's the context in which there was that big meeting 2 weeks ago where Donald Trump, who before this had been very anti-OPEC, became the chief negotiator, bringing the Saudis and the Russians together. Other factors were at work as well, including U.S. senators who had been supportive of funding Saudi Arabia, U.S. military agreements, saying they weren't anymore. These were Republican senators from oil states. And also the big exporters couldn't sell their oil, so they told them they needed to do something. But Trump really used his influence and power to bring it together and came out with this agreement that starts on May 1 with a 9.7 million barrel a day cut. Others are supposed to cut or have a natural decline. But given what I said about the decline in demand, it's really running, that only takes care of part of the problem. And where we are right now is we're running out of storage. That is where if you can't sell the oil, you got to put it in storage. If you don't have storage, you have a problem. And that's what happened last week to somebody who had to sell, had basically got rid of their oil at a negative price of almost $40. So what's going to unfold now is in addition to tankers being filled, and I think 22 of them off the coast of Long Beach in California, using them as storage, is people are going to start shutting in production, closing it down. I think we're going to hear about that from our next speaker. And then we're going to have a natural decline in the United States, which will mean the U.S. will probably go down about 3 million barrels a day. Remember, in February, we reached the highest point the United States had ever reached, 13.1 million barrels a day, more than Russia, more than Saudi Arabia. So I think we're going to obviously we're going to maintain being a major producer, but it is going to be a decline. And if we look to the future for the U.S. shale industry, beyond the current deep pain it's in with unemployment and shutting down drilling, access to capital is going to be a big issue. For the Main Street programs they put in place is meant to get capital to these companies. I think, I don't know if it's happened yet, they're supposed to put a liquidity window in for the large E&P companies to ensure they have liquidity. The international companies, of course, are cutting back. Most of them are significantly on investment. Most of them are trying to maintain their dividend. One has cut their dividend. So if we look forward, let me just point to three things. One, there's going to be a big oversupply of inventories that will have to be worked out, which will be overhang the price. Secondly, there's a very interesting question. If we've had these big cuts in investment, what does it mean for supply 2 or 3 years from now when hopefully we have a growing world economy? And thirdly, it's no longer OPEC and non-OPEC. Now it's the big three. It's Russia, the United States, and Saudi Arabia. They're calling their shots, and whatever they do, one way or the other, will really do much to shape what the oil market looks like in the years ahead. So, Larry, back to you.
Dan, that was great. Thank you. You know, one of the things you mentioned was that there's a 97% reduction in airlines, and And that means that when the refiners finish, they're going to have plenty of jet fuel with nothing to use it for. Is it difficult to store that, the jet fuel, because it's the most valuable component that will be easy to store? But do you see any particular distortion of jet fuel?
Yeah, I think, it actually creates a problem for refiners because you're producing a bunch of different products. You can use, it's sort of, comparable to diesel or mid-grade, but it is a real problem for refiners how to operate. And, as our previous speaker said, the other issue, these companies are also have to deal with employees getting sick and how you have red teams and blue teams. But I think we're seeing definitely refiners cutting back on output.
Dan, thank you.